The Holy Gospel according to St. Mark, the 9th chapter. John said to Jesus, "Teacher, we saw someone casting out demons in your name, and we tried to stop him because he was not following us." But Jesus said, "Do not stop him, for no one who does a deed of power in my name will be able soon afterward to speak evil of me. Whoever is not against us is for us. For truly I tell you, whoever gives you a cup of water to drink because you bear the name of Christ will by no means lose the reward. If any of you put a stumbling block before one of these little ones who believe in me, it would be better for you if a great millstone were hung around your neck and you were thrown into the sea. If your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life maimed than to have two hands and to go to hell, to the unquenchable fire. And if your foot causes you to stumble, cut it off. It is better for you to enter life lame than to have two feet and to be thrown into hell. And if your eye causes you to stumble, tear it out. It is better for you to enter the kingdom of God with one eye than to have two eyes and to be thrown into hell, where their worm never dies and the fire is never quenched. For everyone will be salted with fire. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its saltiness, how can you season it? Have salt in yourselves and be at peace with one another." The Gospel of the Lord. This Sunday marks the final section in our four-week series on the topic of public education. 4 weeks ago, we looked at the root of education, the word educare, which means to be brought back to oneself as a way of understanding the purpose of education. In the second week, we took a look at the role of athletics. Athletics being that intentional, disciplined approach of bringing together body and mind and emotion for a person's physical presence and the benefit of those around them. Last week, we took a look at religion and science, how religion has been a stumbling block to science and lessons that religion can learn from science in its own proclamation of the gospel. Today, we want to conclude by looking at the arts. And the title today is Art Precedes Science. That quote, "Art precedes science," does not come from an artist. It does not come from a theologian. It comes from a scientist in the book Art and Physics by Leonard Schlein. Art precedes science. I want to give you a quote from William Penn. "Liberty without obedience is confusion, and obedience without liberty is slavery." Liberty without obedience is confusion. Obedience without liberty is slavery. And I want to use that quote to shape the sermon. First, let's use that quote in the sense of the time in the history of our country in which it came into being, around the decades shaping the colonies, which became what we call the United States of America. In those early days of this nation, even before the Declaration of Independence was signed and we moved forward in establishing a constitution, there was an organ builder named David Tannenberg. David Tannenberg was a Moravian. He eventually settled in Lititz and would practice the art of building pipe organs for the Moravian community. He had the desire to branch out and move outside of Lidditz and to create organs in other places, but the Moravian elders of the time strongly urged him not to do that. But Tannenberg was ingenious in the way that he studied how organs were voiced, how they were tuned. He ordered books from Europe to teach him new ways of tuning and voicing organs, introduced a new way of tuning the organ. He was also very much aware of two different uses for the organ in worship. In the Moravian community, there was a much sweeter, loving sound. In fact, the word for that kind of organ is the German for love. And it was a broader, warmer tones that were used to accompany the strings and the flutes that were used in Moravian worship. However, when he branched out into the other Protestant denominations, such as the German Lutherans, there was a different purpose for those organs, and that was to be stronger, to lead congregational singing. So the question came to my mind is, why, with this great talent that this man had, did the elders ask him to not branch out from Lidditz? And so I sent an email to Phil Cooper, who does a lot of history with Tannenberg and his organs, and asked him that question. And he responded by saying that, first of all, we need to remember that the Moravians, who lived under persecution, really wanted to keep to themselves. And they didn't want any outside influences coming in and shaping their religious practices and their daily living. They were concerned that worldly practices were starting to take over. So it seems to me that what was happening in that time was this battle between those small groups, those sects, who wanted things to be one particular way to protect their piety, to protect their integrity, and this push that was happening in our colonies, where different groups of different backgrounds and different influences were starting to have interconnection with one another, which is really was paramount to the shaping and development of our nation. So that venture in the art of organ building was reflective of what was happening in the minds of the people in the early part of our nation. I mentioned the organ builder David Tannenberg intentionally because if you look to the rear of our sanctuary and you look at the front case of the organ and take off the side towers, you will see a David Tannenberg case sitting here in this sanctuary. Built in 1774 by David Tannenberger, Tannenberg was considered the largest pipe organ in the United States. Built in the new style of the stronger voices for the purpose of hymn singing. That art was putting out in front of people where their minds were going to go. When reflecting upon the phrase art precedes science, Scott Adams in a blog made this description of what he means by that. That humanity gains knowledge about its own reality when it is collectively ready for it. That readiness is reflected in art. Art, in many ways, can tell us where our minds and our thoughts and our behaviors are going as a people. Think about that spiritually, and take a look particularly at the themes that are running through some more of the popular novels that are out there and some of the better done movies and certainly some of the better developed scripts for television. The overarching theme is that all is falling apart around us. That all of those things that are important to us are crumbling. There are forces that are coming at us that we don't understand, that we can't make sense of, that we can't grab hold of. And we find in each one of those situations a small group of people who must muster the strength, must muster up the willpower to stand firm against those forces. if that's part of the art, then that's also descriptive of where we are going in our own thinking and in our own worries about our spiritual lives. Art precedes science. Art precedes science also in another way related to this quote from William Penn, "Liberty without obedience is confusion, and obedience without liberty is slavery," in the sense that there is the importance of having limits and potential coming together. You know, unfortunately, we live in a time where we want people to live a free-for-all, that freedom is the way for creativity to come into being. Allow people to do what they want, whenever they want, however they want, and out of that freedom will come the greatest thoughts and the greatest innovations. But I think, as Penn did, and many people who reflected upon this, and Rollo May did the same thing in his book, The Courage to Create, that the greatest creativity comes out of limits being set first. I'll give you an example of what I mean by that. Now, when Peter Brown sits at that console behind us and opens up a score to a musical piece, the first thing he sees are the treble and the bass clef to tell him musically how that music is going to take shape. He sees a time signature to tell you how many beats per a measure, which will determine how the piece flows from measure to measure. He will see a key signature, how many sharps, how many flats, to tell which key you should hit when you play the organ. He will see notes between spaces and on lines and above and below, all to tell you which notes to play. Sounds very dull. It's limited. He must play the notes that are on the page. And yet each and every one of us who has heard this man play that instrument know that he explores the full potential of that musical piece. That when you sit here for the postlude on Christmas Eve and Easter Sunday, and he opens up that instrument to play the Vidor Toccata, it's not dull. It's extraordinary. And on Good Friday, when he pulls out the transcription of Komm Susser Tod, the Bach, Come Sweet Death, and reaches that point where the bottom is just growling underneath, it gets to the depth of your soul and just really causes you to experience the very depth of who we are and who Christ is as he died on the cross. That out of those limits, of those notes on that page, extraordinary potential is brought forth. And we are blessed week in and week out by the creative mind who's able to do that for us. Limits and potential. Rollo May also, in his book, The Courage to Create, talks about the creative person's ability to take that which is chaotic, put order to it, and to put it in front of people as an option of where to go next. To take that mess and that chaos and put order to it. I remember years ago, as an organ student myself, I was working on the Vidor Toccata. My teacher was Josephine Freund, who was the organist at the Gettysburg College Chapel. And I had sat through and worked my way through the entire piece, and I went to my lesson the next week, and I played it through, and I sit back sort of proud of myself, my chest puffed out, because I played it all the way through. And she just sort of sits there. And first of all, if she didn't say anything, you worried, because she was very verbose at most times. So there was this silence there, and I knew I was in for trouble. And she gave me one of her wonderful euphemisms. She said, "You know, as I listen to you play that piece, it sounds like you took a huge scoop full of mashed potatoes out of a bowl and flung it against the wall. And it just landed wherever it landed." She was right. At that point, I had not brought that order, that structure, out of that chaos. The capacity to look at what is chaotic, Rollo Mesa, to take a blank blackboard as nothing but that darkness in front of you and say, I'm going to make you a picture of a rabbit, to take that chalk and draw the outline of the rabbit. Immediately then you have two things, that which is contained within the line and that which is outside of the line. But someone has to take the risk to draw the line, to take the risk to come up with the idea, to take the risk to present the hypothesis, to take the risk to present the vision. And it is extraordinarily vulnerable to take that vision and put it in front of others. For you do not know what they will do with it once you open yourself up and present it to them. We as a pastoral staff talk about that on Sunday evenings after one of us preaches. The line that Brené Brown came up with recently in her book on vulnerability captures it all, that after a great speech, a great presentation, she sits there at night after all the adrenaline is worn off and all the accolades have passed by, and she says, I have a vulnerability. What's the word I want? I just blanked out.
Sorry.
Oh, that's horrible. There's a vulnerability here right now. A vulnerability hangover is the word that she uses. When you take the risk to open yourself up, once all the excitement settles down, the vulnerability hangover. I think musicians take that same risk, and artists take that same risk, and writers take that same risk to put chaos into order and put it out in front of others in a vulnerable way. It takes courage to do that. It was the courage it took for David Tannenberg back in the 1770s to build that organ in this space against the advice of the elders in the Moravian Church in Lidditz. It was the courage it took the leaders of this church to reconfigure the inside of this building and turn it from facing that direction to facing this direction. It was the courage that it took the leaders of this church to build a stone structure, started in 1760, dedicated in 1766, and to think it might still be standing in 2012. To put a steeple on it that was the tallest building west of Philadelphia at the time. It took great courage to replace the more simple windows with the elaborate works of art that we have surrounding us. And it took courage for a young organist in 1972 to submit his name to become the organist and choir master of Trinity Lutheran Church. Something he did. I was wrong in my math, Peter. I was only 3 years old when you started. I said four at the early service, and I did the math. And when I was 3 years old, he took the risk to leave his home, to live in Lancaster, and to open up his heart and his soul every week to share the glory of music in our midst. It's that power of art that comes out of courage that leads me to claim that it is significant and important that we do not let the arts go from our schools. Because art precedes science and includes the courage to create. And at the risk of being vulnerable, I think that scientists who have courage to create might just be better scientists than those with higher grades in school. But Peter, today we want to celebrate your courage to share with us for 40 years, to lead us in worship and music, and to open up your soul through the beautiful music you create for us. Thank you, Peter. Amen. We will have him down front in a little bit so you can see his face as well.